I talked to the school bus drivers and the mailmen. They drive those routes every day and they see they're in the same spots every day. So I can talk to them and ask them, hey, have you seen any coyotes? Oh yeah, I see one over here. He's there every morning at this time, or he's there every 2 days at this time. I mean, they can give you like exact information when they're there, what time they're there. Well, and I see guys like they'll shoot a coyote and then they'll jump up and yeah, hoorah, we got it, and do the little dance and all that. And it's like, stop. Sure, yeah. We can do that when we get out, because if there's another coyote out there, where there's one, there's usually a second. I start, unless I'm in an area where I'm like planning on calling a bobcat or hoping for a bobcat, I will start every standoff with howls. And that's just a couple, long howls, just ow, just a long, smooth howl, one or two, and then I'll sit quiet for 30 seconds to a minute. And if I howl on diaphragm, the first one, I'll answer back on like the e-collar. With another, just a long howl. A coyote will come to the call for four things, food, for sex, to fight, or out of curiosity. So I'm trying to trigger one of those three.
Hey guys, before we get into this next episode, I want to share a couple things with you. First, I am happy to announce the new daysinthewild.com is finally launched. Everything is in one place: my guide services, the podcasts, access to my blogs, etc. So go check it out, daysinthewild.com. If you've been following the show lately, you know that we've partnered with Bushnell and Primos. The awesome thing about that is that if you use promo code STL02, STL02, you will save 15% on anything they sell. Doesn't have to be the stuff that I use. I've been using the Bushnell trail cameras for years. I did a couple of reviews over the years, and Bushnell always came out on top. They're excellent. And I know you've heard me talk about Primo's calls and how good they are, but I've also been using their ground blinds, and they're awesome. I don't know if you remember Double Bull blinds, but that's a Primo's product now, or has been for a while. I also tried out a set of their shooting sticks, and for standing shots, or using for clients when we're predator hunting, or my kids that need it when we're spot and stalk and have to get in close on javelina or anything like that. It's like a really good tool. I love them. They're quick setup and they're steady. Lastly, do yourself a favor and go check out the lineup of shooting bags, glassing pads, and other accessories that Phoenix Shooting Bags puts out. Go to phoenixshootingbags.com. Use promo code John Stallone, all one word, and save 20%. Rifle season is upon us, guys. You'll thank me later, I promise. Go check them out. Hey, don't forget to give us a review on iTunes or wherever you're listening. It helps me keep bringing you guys content for free. It definitely helps out our ratings and reach more people. So thanks again for taking care of that. Appreciate it. Now let's roll into this next episode. Hi, welcome to Days in the Wild Big Game Hunting Podcast, brought to you by Phoenix Shooting Bags. Today, we're going to be talking about predator hunting, and we got Brandon Niley, and he's with the Coyote Calling Academy. Brandon has his own podcast, and I've been following him on Instagram, seeing some of the stuff he's been doing, and I've caught a show or two here. So we brought him on today and talk a little predator hunting. What's going on, man?
Oh, not much. Just hanging out.
Awesome. Well, give us a little rundown about yourself, and then we'll throw some questions at you.
Alrighty. So I've been coyote hunting for like 6-7 years now. I grew up hunting deer, elk, everything here in Colorado. And then we would kind of drive around and chase coyotes when it would snow. And that kind of we just driving around looking for them, and it just got old. So I decided I was going to try and call them, and called in my first coyote. Like the first time I went out with like a little piece of crap, Johnny Stewart, little bitty. I can't even remember what it was, but it was like $10 at Walmart,
Okay.
And called one in, and that pretty much hooked me. And that's pretty much been that's where my passion lies. It just, there's something about it, just the ability to fool what now, I mean, then it was just kind of like coyotes were dumb, but now that I understand them a little better, you know, they're probably one of the smartest animals out there.
Yeah, they're pretty witty.
And being able to outsmart them and everything else is just really, really drives my passion in that. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. And then two years ago, I started the podcast. I'd kind of talked about doing it for a little while. And one of the guys that owns one of the companies that I've kind of pro staff for the last 5 years, he kind of helped push me into it and just said, go for it. So I jumped in it and been gone for 2 years now. I have some of my spells where I kind of slack off and not put them out as much as I should, but it's been good. It's been fun. I've got to meet and talk to a lot of different people in the industry, so it's been pretty cool.
Yeah, that's the best part about it, you know, kind of hearing what other guys that have success do and figuring out how that works into your, you know,
yeah,
your style of hunting or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Well, like talking to guys like from like back east where they just run nothing but thermal and night hunt all the time. Where here we can night hunt, but we got to run lights, and night hunting is just not my forte. It kicks my butt, so I don't do it too much. But I like watching them come in and work the call from, you know, a long distance out. It's pretty wide open and flat here. I'm in southeast Colorado.
Okay.
So it's wide open, flat, just prairie grass country. So we can see them come from a long ways away. Just watching them work is really, really cool. So that's, I mean, the night hunting, we do it every now and then, but not a whole lot. But it's been cool to hear those guys with their thermal and how they do things different. And I mean, day hunting to them is like, they're like, we're not even going to waste our time with that. It's almost impossible, you know? So it's just cool how different things from across the country work out.
Yeah. No, I actually haven't done that much night hunting at all. It's something I'd like to do. I think it'd be cool.
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, it's pretty cool. You'll be scanned, like with the lights, you scan and they just pitch black. You don't see nothing. And then all of a sudden there's a set of eyes coming at you.
Yeah.
And the first couple of times it's kind of like, oh, I wonder what that is coming at me.
Right.
But it's cool. It's different. It's tough. That's for sure.
Nice. So why don't you go ahead and tell everybody the name of your podcast and all that stuff so I'll put that in my show notes if you guys want to check them out.
Okay. So the podcast is the Coyote Calling Academy. It's on every podcast platform, iTunes, Google, Spotify, Podbean. And then there's a Facebook page and Instagram page, and it's just at Coyote Calling Academy podcast.
Nice. All right, good deal. So let's jump into some of these questions that I got. Let's start with the keys. Some keys to maximizing success. What are some things that you think that you do or that you noticed play, you know, a role in your success?
Probably the main thing is just understanding like child behavior and how, I mean, they're never going to respond the way that you want them to or think they are, but just little things as far as a coyote is always going to, if you let them, they will always circle downwind. So setting up with, you know, the call upwind of you to where that in front of you. So when that coyote circles downwind, that you're going to be able to see that, you know, some guys will sit with the wind straight in their face, which in some areas that's okay, but in a lot of cases you want to be able to see that downwind side. And I know like when I first started, that's one thing that I was missing, and I was missing a lot of coyotes that I'd get up and leave and start walking out and they were behind me, you know, or just happened to turn around and they were there, and just not things like that. Just the little stuff as far as how they're going to use the terrain in low spots to get in. Like you'll hear guys ask all the time about coyotes coming in and they'll hang up 200-300 yards away, or they can hear them howling just in the edge of the trees, but they'll never come out to where you can see them and things like that. And I've learned kind of when they do that, like some guys will say that it's a, there's like a territorial boundary there. Mm-hmm. So they won't cross that and whatever. And that may be true. You know, I don't know. I'm not a biologist, so I don't know for sure, but I mean, they're pretty, coyotes are really transient anyways.
Right.
And they roam a lot. So I don't know if I can fully.
I don't believe that to be true. I think that's I think that's a wise. I mean, I think, you know, for breeding purposes, yes, I agree. You know, if you were making coyote breeding noises and, you know, trying to get one to come in with coyote sounds.
Yeah. Yeah.
That might, well, that I could see, but like when you're, wailing on a rabbit call, you know, or, you know, you're playing a jackrabbit distress or whatever, that coyote don't give a shit about boundaries. He's going to come in, grab that rabbit and go back to where he came from.
Exactly. Exactly. And even, I mean, breeding, even in that too, you know, if it's a male and he's wanting to get breed a female, I guess I would think he would still want to come in and breed that female unless there was a male in the area that he knew of that had already kicked his butt once. You know, that's the only thing I could really see.
Right.
But like in those situations, I found it's like the coyotes can, they've seen something or there's something in that setup that's not right. So
I think it's what they don't see.
Or that too. So like I'll try and give them a little bit, like I'll give up, you know, having the sun at my back and maybe it's in my eyes or on me or something, or maybe give up like the perfect vantage point to see everything. Mm-hmm. And let them use a low spot to come in where they feel secure. But I know I have to kill it when it pops out in this spot. Like it's going to be quick. So whether it's close and you're using setting up with a shotgun or whatever, you know that you have to kill it when it pops out right there and it's going to be quick, but give them a little bit of comfort to give them some comfort to come in.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Little things like that. And then scouting. I mean, I scout coyotes just like you would scout, you know, mule deer, elk, whatever.
Cool. That leads me to my next question. how do you choose a place to hunt? Yeah.
Once you do it a little bit and you kind of see, you'll be driving and you'll see spots that you're like, they look like they'll just hold coyotes, you know, you kind of learn that, but just scouting and locating them, just like mule deer, elk, anything that you're going to hunt, scouting. So.
Well take me through that. You're at home and you're looking on Google Earth, take it from that part and bring me out to the field.
If I'm looking on Google Earth or, you know, some of the hunting maps and all that,
yeah,
I'm looking for a place with some cover or like a drainage where even like creek bottoms, washouts, things like that, like even here where it's real flat, wide open, there's not much of trees or river bottoms per se, but in those washes, the tumbleweeds will blow in and they'll fill those low spots with tumbleweeds. So, and I know that mice are going to be staying in there. The rabbits will get in there for cover. They'll be filled with mice. So things like that, that's a food source, a place where they can kind of get some cover, and then just try and figure out where those areas are together and then go to the field. And, you know, if it's the summertime and you're not hunting, just driving around, watching for them, looking for like out the end of summer, August, September, when you're antelope hunting, watching where you're seeing coyotes at. The pups are getting kicked out of dens, so they'll be running around marking those spots down, noting that stuff. And then just talking to the ranchers. I talked to the school bus drivers and the mailmen. They drive the rural routes and everything. Mm-hmm. And they drive those routes every day and they see they're in the same spots every day. So I can talk to them and ask them, hey, have you seen any coyotes? Oh yeah, I see one over here. He's there every morning at this time, or he's there every 2 days at this time. And I mean, they can give you like exact information when they're there, what time they're there. And that'll break it down and give you an exact time frame of when you should be there, you know?
Right.
Cause they're in those areas regularly. And then at night, a new area, I'll go look at it in the daylight just so I know what it looks like and where I want to set up and everything. But we'll go out at night and drive the roads and just howl on a diaphragm, on a hand call, or with the electronic call. Just let out a couple howls and then listen to where they're at, and then try and mark those as close as we can on the map, and then figure out where the best spot off of the map would be to set up and everything on them.
Cool. So let's talk about the setup. You know, what's your approach? What's your setup look like? Try to paint a picture for me.
My approach is you want to get in without being seen, which in some areas is a lot easier said than done. And then you have to have the wind in your favor. There's whether it's directly in your face or a crosswind. I prefer a crosswind just because that allows me to see the downwind side. But you have to have the wind. If you don't have the wind, they're not. You're starting off in the negative as it is, because you're not going to beat their nose, and they're going to rely on their nose 100%. But that's the one thing that I have to have. I can give up some of the vantage point. I can give up the sun. I can give up some things, but the wind is the one thing that I won't give up at all. And if it's not right, then we won't go into that spot. I'll back out and try and approach it a different way. But once I get in there, I want an area where I can see a fair amount, a decent amount. So you would like to have a decent vantage point. Like I said, you want to be able to see the downwind every time. And set up, I put the collar, I always put it upwind of me at the upwind angle, and like on a 45 degree from where I'm going to sit. Upwind in like 40 yards in front of me. If that, I don't walk it out very far at all. I think in different areas is going to be a little different, but where I'm at, it's wide open and you can see a long ways. So them coyotes can see you from a long ways away. So I don't want any more movement in my area that I'm going to call than I need to have. So I'll put it 40 yards at the max. Sometimes I'll set it right next to me if I don't want that movement there. And it's just because I don't want to be seen. So I don't want extra movement and everything going around. And then it's always, like I said, upwind about 40 yards out, and that's pretty much it. I mean,
yeah. I mean, I typically either bow hunt for predators, or, you know, I shotgun hunt. I don't rifle hunt. So vantage point for me is not even a thing.
Yeah.
Like it's all about the wind. It's all about the setup. It's all about how.
Yeah. I like to kill my coyotes with the shotgun. That is what I really like. I like them up close. I haven't been able, since I saw you like a year or two ago, post a video of you shooting one with the bow. That's on my list, but I haven't figured out how I'm going to pull that off because it's so wide open here. I don't have any cover to get move to draw. So I got to figure that out, but I'm going to get it done one of these days. But I like the shotgun, and I want to shotgun every coyote. So I want them coming as close as possible. So that's another reason why I'm not walking the collar way out, because if I put the collar out 100 yards, that coyote's not going to come into shotgun range. You know, he's going to hit the collar and then turn around and run out. I do carry a rifle on every stand and the shotgun.
Right.
But it's just, I would prefer to get them with the shotgun.
No, I'm with you for sure. You know, for me, I'm with you. You need to be able to see the downwind side. I always use a perpendicular wind. I don't ever have wind in my face. Definitely never have it in my back.
Yeah, for sure.
That's not going to work out for anybody. But, you know, bow hunting them and doing it in an open environment like you're talking about, you got to pick a room, you know, something that has enough structural, you know, a drainage or whatever, that they have to get themselves into that kill zone to see the call. That, you know, we were talking about earlier, when coyotes hang up or predators hang up, it's all about because they've got to a spot that they feel that they should be able to see whatever's making the sound. And that's what it comes down to. Yeah, so if you look at it, when I do myself, you know, when I do my setups, it's always like, I always look at it from the coyote standpoint of view, or from the, you know, whatever I'm hunting standpoint of view, if it's elk or whatever, turkey, it doesn't matter. You got to think about it. I'm the animal coming in, and what should I be able to see at this point? What should I be able to see at this point? And is that close enough for me to make a shot at?
Because, exactly.
So
exactly.
That's the way I always approach it. So,
and that's the thing, like I tell guys that are just starting out, if they make a stand and a coyote comes in and hangs up somewhere and doesn't come in, he stops and then just turns around and leaves or loses interest, whatever. I always tell those guys, leave your chair, your gun, or your something there so you can see where you were sitting, and then walk out to where that coyote was and turn around and look back at where you were sitting, and then see if you can see, you know, were you reflecting? Was, can you see, like here we get some really small hills, so you'll hide the truck behind a hill, but then you go out and you can see the roof of the truck behind where you were calling from, and you don't even know, you can see, you know, if you were reflecting or something was off there, you know. So I always tell guys to go out and look, and then look back where you were at and see if you can find what spooked them off.
Yeah, no, that's huge, because I see it all the time where your guys will park their truck and then they'll walk in 50 yards and they'll make a stand, and I'm like, man, your truck's like in plain view.
Yeah, and it doesn't work very often. I mean,
you know, if you're rifle hunting, it might, you know, but if you're going to get one with a shotgun, or, that kind of work.
Yeah. Or, I mean, even private property, like I have one spot that it does work. The truck is in plain sight. It's flat and it's plain sight. And you would never believe that it would work. The first time I took my partner out, he's looking at me like, this is not going to work. What are we doing? But it's 100% stand. And we parked the truck right in plain sight. Now, I try to park it so it's not as big to see, you know, but it's plain sight. But that rancher drives that road every day.
Gotcha.
Every day checking his cows and there's a couple mineral blocks and stuff there. Mm-hmm. So they're used to seeing it. And I think that's the only reason I get away with it in that spot. But that is the only place that I've ever seen that work.
But how far away are you calling from that truck?
Oh, I'll walk maybe 100 yards.
Oh, only 100? Okay.
It's pretty close. Yeah. But it's not a normal. I usually walk to stand from where I park. I try and walk as far as possible without walking too far, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, for sure. You don't want to go through too much country that they could be in.
Exactly.
Or expose yourself too much.
Yeah. Exactly. So, I mean, if it's wide open, I'll try and park on one side of the hill and just pop right over the other side and sit down, because they may have heard the truck and everything else, but there's enough ranchers around here that I don't know if the truck noise really bothers them, where if I was to walk over the next hill, then everything between here and there is going to be able to see me walking all that distance. So you got to kind of weigh your odds. What's going to be the, what are you given to get, you know, type thing.
Yeah. I'm a firm believer in that. Be as low impact as possible.
Yeah.
I try to beat that idea into my guides too. And at first they didn't, now they all do it, you know, and they're so, so much more successful.
It's one of the few things
I could pat myself on the back for teaching them.
Well, and I see guys like they'll shoot a coyote and then they'll jump up and hoorah, we got it, and do the little dance and all that, and it's like, we can do that when we get out, because if there's another coyote out there, where there's one, there's usually a second,
right?
Whether it comes in or not is a different story, but there's usually another one there or close proximity.
Right.
So if that coyote heard you calling and then heard a gunshot and then heard you get up and woohoo, hoorah, yada, yada, then the next time you come back there, he ain't coming in. He's going to know something's up.
You know?
So I'm in and out, and there's like no talking or anything until we get back to the truck.
Oh yeah.
In the truck, you know.
I'm with you. I tell people I approach everything, all hunting that I do, like a whitetail hunter does in the Midwest, you know.
Yeah.
I try to be scent free. I try to get in and out of my stands, or, you know, calling stands, whatever it is. I try to do everything as low impact as possible. and not educate, you know, or tip off, you know, an animal of my presence.
And I was reading an article, it was a while back when I first started hunting, but this guy had written, I can't even remember who it was, but he had written this article where he would go in, I think he was a photographer, but he would go in and try and call, and then nothing would come in. He would leave, back out, and then go up and glass through a spotting scope way off. And it was like 80% of the time, with an hour after the calling was over, a coyote would come in to look at, to check it out. It was a really high number. It was just like,
I've seen that and heard that.
Yeah, they kind of know something's up and they'll wait. So like at the end of the stand, you know, always when you're done calling, sit for, you know, 10, 15 minutes or so and just look, you know, don't make a sound.
Yeah. You're not the only person I've heard say that. I probably won't do that when I'm coyote hunting just because I just like to run and gun. But
yeah,
there has been times that I've done that, not intentionally. I remember just recently, in like the last year or so, I made a stand. Coyote came in and he hung up. Not really, he didn't hung up, but he stopped in a spot where I didn't have a shot with my bow. And then, you know, he went down through this wash and circled around and then he left, right? And so I shut the call off. And I don't know 100% it was the same coyote. I didn't really take that much inventory of him. But I got a phone call and I was talking really quiet and, you know, talking to this person. And like 10 minutes went by and here comes that coyote again. I was assuming it's the same coyote. It might have been another coyote. Just came, basically came in the same spot. And I end up whacking that one. But, you know, and one time I was with my father-in-law. We got done calling and, you know, we just sat there bullshitting for a couple seconds. And then we ended up getting up and we were just standing there and I was talking to him and whatever. And I wasn't, you know, we weren't talking loud, obviously, or anything like that, but just standing there talking to him. And I walked over to get the call and I look up and here comes this coyote trotting down, you know, and I actually missed him. I took a shot at him like 80 yards with the shotgun and I might've hit him with a couple of pellets or whatever, but it didn't seem like I did. Yeah. I mean, it happens all the time.
I've had one, I was in a spot and I called and I killed one, killed it, left, went and made two more stands and then realized I had left. I don't remember what it was. I left a hand call or something laying there. So I went back and walked in to grab that or see if I could find it. And there was a coyote sitting there kind of milling around, sniffing the ground when I come up over the hill where I had just shot that other one. So, I mean, like I said, when there's one, there's usually another.
Right. So let's walk me through one of your coyote stands from start to finish.
Dude, as far as sequence and
everything, go ahead. You know,
so
sequence, sound, volume, cadence. You already talked about the wind, but go ahead and reiterate it. Sorry, go ahead.
So once I set up, I'll sit for a minute or two and just kind of let everything quiet down before I actually start calling. I run hand calls a lot and I like to howl on a diaphragm. So I start, unless I'm in an area where I'm like planning on calling a bobcat or hoping for a bobcat, I will start every standoff with howls.
Okay.
And that's just a couple, you know, long howls, just ow, just a long, smooth howl, one or two, and then I'll sit quiet for 30 seconds to a minute. And if I howl on diaphragm, the first one, I'll answer back on like the e-caller with another, just a long howl, and then sit for a little bit. And then I'll go into my, well, and then it depends. If I get an answer back and there's a coyote really close, then when they answer, I'll stick with vocals, because if they respond to vocals, I'm not going to change to a distress call. I'm going to stick with what they're responding to. So then I might let off another howl, or, and it's more just kind of like gut feeling, I guess, but I might howl again, or just kind of go into like a pup distress or something like that. But that's only if I get a response and they're close and a non-threatening sound, like if they respond and they do like that warning bark, just a couple real fast barks and then a short howl. Uh-huh. That's like a warning bark. So that kind of basically, he knows something's up. He's heard this game before. He knows something up and he's warning everybody. Now, I won't necessarily give up on that stand if he's close and doing that. What I'll do if that happens is I'll just start copycatting him. I'll get on the diaphragm and he does his warning bark and I'll do my warning bark right back at him. Just exactly copycat him. And that's worked for me probably 80-90% of the time, but it does take a while. Like you'll go back and forth for a long time before he comes in. Mm-hmm. But if it's just a regular long howl back, then I might go into just like a pup distress or something like that and get him to come in. If I get howls that are way off in the distance, I'll just note that and try and plan my route for the day to go through that area. But I usually roll into like a rabbit distress. I prefer like a cottontail distress. I like and seem to have better luck with a high pitch, fast paced cottontail sound. Mm-hmm. Over like jackrabbits or anything else. But there's plenty of guys that kill them with jackrabbit, bird distress, whatever. I really like the high pitch, fast paced cottontail sound. They seem to, I have the best luck with them, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I'll play, you know, two or three of those. And when I start a rabbit distress sound or any distress sound, I basically start with the remote on zero. Okay. And I'll play the sound and then run it up like one or two butt clicks and then 30 seconds, 45 seconds, couple more clicks and just keep working that volume up steadily. And then I'll hit, it depends on the volume and the call, like the lucky duck that I run, I'll hit probably 10 or 12 on the volume and then run it back down a couple clicks and then go back up and then back down. My Fox Pro that I have is about the same volume numbers.
Right.
Just depends on how loud the call is. But I'll hit that point where I don't really want to go much louder and run it up and then back down and just keep working that volume up and down. But I do let it play the whole time. Like I don't pause the sound at all. I just manipulate the volume. And then I'll switch to a different cottontail sound or maybe even a bird distress sound and let that go for a couple minutes and then manipulating the volume up and down there. And then I'll end every stand, no matter what, with a pup distress of some sort. And that will be like the last 5 minutes of stand. I don't usually stay on stand longer than 30 minutes. And that's like the max. If I know there's one there, he's just not coming in, I'll stay for 30 minutes or so. But unless I have eyes on a coyote, then it's a little different depending on if we're contest hunting or just hunting for the day, then that'll depend. But usually 20, 30 minutes and I'm ready to go. I get kind of antsy. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, don't be afraid to play like out of the box, off the wall sounds. I mean, prairie dog sounds were good. A house cat, chickens, just even if it's a sound that, you know, you don't have like snowshoe hare. We don't have snowshoe hares here, but it'll work. Antelope fawn distress, whitetail fawn distress, just anything. I don't think that coyotes know when you play a sound that it's a cottontail or a jackrabbit or a deer distress. They just hear it as a dinner bell. It's just food. It's something in distress. So just something to play, figure out which sound is they're responding to that day. And then once I've got, they're coming into this sound, that's the sound I'm going to stick to for pretty much the whole day until something changes. But mm-hmm. Once I find that sound that they respond to that day, that's what I'm going to stick with for the most part. But I will always start with a howl and end with pup distress. The prey distress in the middle, that's just going to depend on, you know, what they've been coming into that day or something like that. I don't run a decoy at all. Mm-hmm. So that, I mean, some guys like it, some don't. I don't run it. I think it's like 50-50 on them coming into it or running off. I've had coyotes run straight in and literally nose in the speaker hole and knock the call over with no decoy. So I don't think it really helps or hurts to have a decoy or not. So I don't mess with it.
I have teeth mark on my Fox Pro from them being picked up by coyotes.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. I don't use decoys. I try them, you know, I played with them a little bit. I don't believe them.
And volume, as far as that goes on howls, I'll howl at a very loud volume. Coyote howls are loud. They're not quiet. I mean, usually you hear coyotes at night, you can hear them up to 1 or 2 miles away, depending on your terrain. So I howl loud, but as far as my prey distress sounds, I always start like just super, super quiet. You won't barely hear it for the first minute or two, and then just work up from there and then just keep manipulating that volume up and down. I know some of the calls, like a button, once the coyote's coming in and you spot them, that you can hit a button and it'll like drop the volume 50% of what it is, or some guys will pause it or turn the volume down or whatever when they're coming in. Mm-hmm. Once I spot one, I'm not messing with the volume. I don't change anything. If my call is on 30 and this coyote is coming in and he's moving, it's going to stay at 30 until he's dead. Like,
same here.
What's working is working, so don't change it. Like, as soon as if he's coming in and you change a sound or you run the volume way down or whatever, he's going to, oh, something's up. And that's when they're going to start hanging up. So I don't mess with it once I've spotted one. Unless he hangs up or loses interest, then I might change the sound. But as far as if he's coming, nothing is changing.
No, I agree with you. I actually agree with you on a lot of things. But I always end my stuff with a pup distress or a fox distress, depending on where I'm hunting. I manipulate the volume, and I also manipulate the pitch because I use a Fox Pro Fusion, so I have that.
Okay.
I'm constantly messing with the pitch.
Yeah, and that's going to depend on time of year too. Like, we're getting now, we're getting into, end of January, so we're getting January, February, first part of March is when they're starting to breed, so now I'll still run a distress every now and then, but I'll rely more on vocals this time of year, just because that's what a coyote will come to the call for three things or four things, you know, food, for sex, to fight, or out of curiosity. And so I'm trying to trigger one of those three. So summertime, wintertime, breeding season, I'll still run a distress and see if that's working. But like this time of year, I'll start relying more on just vocals, howls, female whimpers and whines, and pup distresses. Early in the spring, pup screams, pup distress, pup whines, things like that, just for what the time of year is. But I still use all of it all year too. So it's not only this time of year I use this, only this time of year I use this. It's all used all year, just parts of the year I might rely on it a little more heavily.
Right, right. I haven't really done a whole lot with the breeding stuff, or really, other than coyote distress calls, I haven't used, or coyote fight calls. I'll use coyote fighting, you know, fighting with another animal, that stuff, yes. Uh-huh. But I don't really use the breeding stuff. I don't use the coyote communication. I didn't spend a whole lot of time with that.
Yeah.
And in my head, they always have to eat. So
they do. They're always going to eat. I mean, it's no different than you or me. You know, we always got to eat. It's just going to depend on our mood or what other opportunity. If it's time to breed, and
they're like, not thinking I try to explain about it so much. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I try to explain it. If it's time to breed, and you know, for me, if my wife says, "Hey, let's go upstairs and have some fun," or "You can have this piece of pie," well,
yeah,
I'll take that. I'm gonna go upstairs right now and I'll eat the pie afterwards. You know?
Exactly.
you gotta kind of play it with whatever. No, I think a lot of guys will overthink it, but if you're gonna use vocals and everything, you have to really dive in and try and learn as much as you can as far as to what you're saying.
And that's because exactly why I haven't. I haven't done. I just, you know, I got really good at one thing and I'm just kind of like, I'm just going to leave it at that because,
yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong. A lot of people associate me with coyote hunting, but it's not, that's not all I do, you know?
Like, yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah. And so many, like a howl, it's just like, I mean, just like elk, if you're not an elk caller, you know, to the normal ear, an elk bugle sounds like an elk bugle. You don't know the difference between just a locator bugle, a challenge bugle or whatever, a roundup bugle, whatever. You can't.
Right.
The average person doesn't know the difference. Same thing with coyotes. You know, you don't know if it's a long howl, a invite howl, or a warning bark. Warning barks will sound a lot like challenge howls, and a lot of guys will get confused. They'll hear a coyote warning barking and they'll throw a challenge bark out. Well, you're challenging that coyote to fight, and he's like, well, I was just trying to warn you, you know, I'm out of here, this guy's an a-hole,
yeah,
he's gonna take off. Like, it's so you got to be really careful there, because you can, I don't get aggressive with a coyote at all unless coyotes get aggressive with me. I'll do howls, the distresses, the female whines and whimpers and everything else, but I won't challenge a coyote at all unless he challenges me first and like really gets, like if he throws out just one challenge bark and then is quiet, mm-hmm. I'm not going to get aggressive with that coyote at all. But if he sits out there and challenge barks me for 10 minutes, then I'll get aggressive with him and try to get him to come in. It's just, is he really mad or is he just trying to intimidate me type thing, you know?
Right.
So you got to be real careful with the howls and stuff, or you can end up hurting more than you're helping. But the breeding sounds, they do work wonders this time of year. I mean, if you play them in the right way, the right order thing. And with the electronic calls now, there's guys that have a whole breeding sequence. All you got to do is push the button and let it go through its thing, and you don't have to do nothing really.
Right.
And they work great. Just, I guess it's just whether, how deep you want to dive into it, you know?
That's awesome. Well, cool, man. That was a lot of good information. Glad to see you have, some of the same philosophies that I do. Just makes you, just kind of validifies, you know, validates or set, you know, what you've been doing, you know, it's kind of nice.
Yeah.
To know that. The other guys.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
That see success. So yeah. One more time. Give us where our listeners can find you.
Alrighty. Yeah. So, like I said, my podcast is on every platform, iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, Podbean, all the major platforms. And then Facebook is, I think Facebook page is just Coyote Calling Academy podcast. The Instagram is coyote_calling_academy_podcast.
Awesome. All right, man. Well, thanks for coming on and sharing your knowledge with us. Definitely, we'll talk to you soon, and maybe one of these days we'll get together and we'll do some coyote hunting together.
Yeah. Yeah. Sounds good, man. I'd love to come see how you do that with the bow. So
yeah, awesome. All right, bud. Thanks a lot.
Yep. Thank you.
All right. Well, that's it for this episode. Thanks for tuning in. Be sure to check out daysinthewild.com and be sure to give us a review on iTunes. Thank you. And we'll check you out on the next episode.